As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. It is Saturday, and today's episode is going back to 2013. It's an episode about a man who suddenly turned to piracy after a life of education and privilege.
It's Steed Bonnet, whose story intersects with Blackbeard, which makes him pretty interesting, and whose career as a pirate was relatively short.
The day this episode comes out is also the 300th anniversary of his being put on trial for piracy. So enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today we're going to talk about something that's come up on the podcast before, which is piracy. But we're going to talk about a pirate that doesn't always get a lot of play in history and retellings. It's Steed Bonnet, who was often referred to as the gentleman pirate.
Right. This is a pirate that I have heard about because I grew up in North Carolina. And if you grow up in North Carolina, often you hear a lot about pirates.
Yeah. And he, his career, you know, intersected with North Carolina many times. And so he is often heard about there and in some of the nautical museums there. But it's like the further inland you get from North Carolina, the less and less you hear about him. He had a very short career in piracy, and it was really out of character for him. He was a retired military man, even though he was quite young. And then he sort of seemingly suddenly left his family to pursue this life of piracy. And historians have theorized about what caused this. Some say it could have actually been a midlife crisis of some sort. It could have been the result of financial issues. It could have been brought about by a mental break. And what's really interesting is that his story is actually tied to Blackbeard, but Bonnet is often left out of the accounts of it, of Blackbeard's happenings, or he's just sort of mentioned in passing. But he is really fascinating because he had this educated demeanor and he was very stylish, and it earned him this nickname, the Gentleman Pirate.
Bonnet was born in 1688 in Barbados. His great-grandfather was one of Barbados's first English settlers.
And he was actually orphaned as a child. Even though he was born to a good family, he was not without, difficulty. But he inherited a 400-acre estate that was managed for him by a guardian until he reached adulthood.
He married Mary Allenby, who was also from a wealthy plantation family, in 1709.
So that was when he was about 21. And he retired from military life to run a sugar plantation in Barbados. And he spent a little less than a decade after leaving the military kind of making a go at family life and, you know, running the plantation. But that was all he could handle, apparently.
In A General History of the Pirates, from their first rise and settlement of the island of Providence to the present time, which was written by Captain Charles Johnson and sometimes attributed to Daniel Defoe, and first published in 1724, it is written of Bonnet. He had the least temptation of any man to follow such a course of life from the condition of his circumstances. It was very surprising to everyone to hear of the major's enterprise in the island where he lived. And as he was generally esteemed and honored before he broke out into open acts of piracy, for he was afterwards rather pitied than condemned.
So at the time, during the 17-teens, it really was not unheard of for people to turn to piracy in desperation or in a bid to fight the establishment and the growing gap between the rich and the poor. But Bonnet was an educated man from a good family, so it initially does seem kind of incongruous to think of him in those terms. But there are some clues about why he actually may have changed the course of his life.
Some historians have suggested that he was probably a supporter of James Stuart as King of England and felt a sense of rebellion against the German-born George I.
So Jacobite politics may have played a part in that decision, in his decision to become a pirate. And it's also worth noting that Bonnet borrowed about £1,700, which is the equivalent of roughly $400,000 today, around 1717. So it's possible that he was having financial troubles or that the plantation wasn't going well, although it's also possible he wanted the money to start his pirate enterprise.
Nobody's going to loan you money to start a pirate business.
Well, he didn't tell people that's what he was doing.
On a more sad note, his firstborn son died as a baby, which some believe to have catalyzed a mental break. He was also said to have experienced some, quote, discomforts he found in a married state. So, in other words, some historians theorize that he was nagged so much that he ran away to be a pirate.
So his start in the world of piracy is really unusual. He actually had his ship, which he called Revenge, built and outfitted with cannons at a local Barbados shipyard, and he started that around 1716. Colin Woodard, who is the author of the book The Republic of Pirates, posits that Bonnet likely told people the ship was intended for a legitimate privateering plan. And I know to some people, privateering and piracy have sort of become a little bit interchangeable, but there is a nuance of difference there. So just in case you do not know, the distinction is that privateers are acting on behalf of a governing nation, while pirates don't really answer to anybody. But their methods are virtually identical in many cases, which has kind of fueled the confusion of the interchangeability of those words.
In any case, instead of contracting with the government, Bonnet made a nighttime departure on the ship Revenge in April of 1717, and under cover of night, he headed toward North America, calling himself Captain Edwards.
And this is a good time to mention that Bonnet had no knowledge about seafaring. He was really sort of a landlubber. And so it's unusual and bizarre. It just kind of feeds that whole image of him as one of those, like, why did you do this? You're making a really rash decision, even though he clearly had planned ahead to some degree.
Well, and it's also unusual in that most pirates would start their career as in piracy by commandeering another vessel. They would steal somebody else's ship, but he went and built one.
He financed it.
And paid for everything himself, or maybe with this loan from before.
Yeah. And he first headed for the Virginia coast, and he actually successfully took several ships, but it's probably the 70 men on his crew that really should get the credit for that initial success, because some of them were pretty experienced pirates, and it's unlikely that he really had much in the way of leadership skills since he didn't know seafaring and had never been pirating before.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and last hour on the business. I understand now, it He's a wise man, marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Revenge then headed to New York and took a sloop that had been headed for the West Indies. And they landed a group of men at Gardner's Island, which you may remember from our Goody Garlic episode, where they actually bought provisions instead of stealing them.
Yeah, so it again kind of fuels that image of him as something of a gentleman, that he's like, no, let's go buy things instead of just plundering for what we need. But beginning in August of that same year, so we're still in 1717, Captain Edwards and the Revenge's crew attacked a number of vessels near the Charleston Harbor. But after their exploits there culminated in setting fire to a sloop in a North Carolina inlet, which he apparently did become a fan of setting fire to ships after he had taken them, Bonnet and his crew kind of couldn't decide what they wanted to do for their next course of action. And they eventually made their way south to Honduras, which is where Blackbeard enters the tale.
Because Bonnet wasn't really experienced in maritime affairs, he would usually yield to others. So when he fell into company with Edward Teach, also known as Blackbeard, while he was in Honduras,
The experienced and hardened Teach easily became the alpha male in their relationship.
Yeah, Bonnet's crew joined Blackbeard's, and Bonnet kind of became a superfluous figure rather rapidly. Bonnet had been recovering from injuries at the time after a bad encounter with a Spanish warship, and he also lost some of his crew. And he apparently agreed to this situation, thinking it was a temporary setup. Like, oh, you'll just handle things while I'm not feeling well.
Right. Blackbeard had something else in mind. Mm-hmm. He saw Bonnet's weakness and decided to seize command of the Revenge. Bonnet spent his time on Blackbeard's ship without anything to do while Blackbeard's first mate ran the Revenge. And while the relationship seemed to be friendly enough, Bonnet realized he was basically a captive.
And he became, you know, kind of depressed and melancholy. He openly told the crew that he was unhappy and that he had tired of the pirate life, and that he would really like to start a new life in Spain or Portugal because he would be, quote, ashamed to see the face of any Englishman again.
I have to interject here that if I were being held prisoner on Blackbeard's ship, I don't know that I would go around saying that I was tired of the pirate life openly to people.
Yeah, but accounts kind of paint it as though he was sort of endeared to the men, and this didn't make them think any less of him. Like, they almost sort of loved him more for it in the various tellings of it. So whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I thought it was interesting. And while these two were sailing, quote, together, but I mean, they were technically in the same place, but not really partners. This is when Blackbeard actually took the frigate La Concorde and then rechristened it to be Queen Anne's Revenge, which is his famous flagship.
On June 10th, 1718, the Queen Anne's Revenge ran aground at Topsail Inlet, which is now known as Beaufort Inlet.
And there's actually some debate over whether this was accidental or if Teach was trying to break up the 400 men under him. He kind of recognized that the winds were changing for pirates and that maybe running in a big pack was not smart. But again, this is a matter of some historical debate. Teach was an accomplished sailor, so it would be a little unusual for him to be caught off guard and run aground, but at the same time, anything's possible. So I just feel like we should have that aside. So while the Queen Anne's Revenge is run aground,
Bonnet went to Bath, North Carolina. He wanted to take a pardon that had been offered by the king. The king's proclamation had come out on September the 5th, 1717, and stated that pirates surrendering to authorities, quote, should have his most gracious pardon.
But when Bonnet returned to the ships, he found that Teach had stripped the Revenge and abandoned more than 24 crew members on a small island. The stranded crew members had believed they were doomed to die, so it's likely that Bonnet's arrival was really quite welcome.
So at this point, having accepted the pardon, Bonnet's slate was clean. He invited all the abandoned men to join him, refitted the Revenge, and renamed it the Royal James. His plan was to sail to St. Thomas and seek out a privateering commission. But they never made it to St. Thomas.
No, the crew that he had invited to join him were all on board with this privateering plan. But as they were preparing to set sail, a boat that had come up against them, just meaning adjacent to them, that to sell apples and cider to the men, actually informed them that Blackbeard and a small crew of 18 or 20 men were at Ocracoke Inlet. They were having a big party, which is famous in its own right. So that's the Blackbeard side of the story. But Bonnet immediately acted upon this information and went in pursuit of Teach because he was still kind of smarting from the way things went down.
After 4 days of looking for Teach with no success, they instead headed not to St. Thomas, but to Virginia. So it seems that his resolve to go legit was not really that strong.
No, and in July of 1718, they actually took provisions, which they were desperate for, from another ship that they encountered. But they didn't want the act to be recorded as piracy. So in return, they gave, quote, 8 or 10 casks of rice and an old cable in lieu thereof. So they kind of were like, we want to make this fair, even though we kind of raided you, but we're not pirates, we just need stuff.
Next, the major, who was now going by the name Captain Thomas, and his crew encountered a sloop off of Cape Henry and looted her for liquor. Bonnet sent 8 men over to the sloop, theoretically to take care of the ship, but maybe to make some kind of a deal. But they joined that crew and sailed away with them.
And at this point, somewhere around this time, Bonnet just sort of threw all caution to the wind and went headfirst back into a life of piracy. He really abandoned that whole concept of privateering. And the Royal James then made its way up and down the Atlantic coast, taking and plundering vessel after vessel.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature. And of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture. And we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At the end of July 1718, Bonnet had sailed to the Cape Fear River, where he and his crew found themselves stuck for repairs. The Royal James was terribly leaky, and it needed to be fixed to remain seaworthy. So it sat for nearly 2 months while the work was done.
Which is a long time for a boat to just sit there, especially when it is a boat full of criminals. So when word reached the Council of South Carolina that a pirate sloop was careened in Cape Fear, Colonel William Rhett
set out to find and capture Bonnet. And Rhett had under his command two ships, the Henry and the Sea Nymph.
On September 26, 1718, Rhett's two sloops ran aground while headed up the Cape Fear River. While they were getting back on float, Bonnet's pirates found them, and the crew manned three canoes to take the ships. The pirates didn't know who they were attempting to take, but realized quickly and turned around to deliver a report to Bonnet.
And Bonnet was incensed by this. That night, he penned a letter to the governor of Carolina that said if those two sloops had been sent against him by that governor, and if Bonnet got clear of those two sloops, he was going to burn and destroy every single vessel coming and going out of South Carolina. He's basically like, you better hope you win this, because if you don't and I find out you were actually behind it, I'm basically going to ruin your life.
The next day, September 27, 1718, a battle ensued that lasted for hours. At one point, both Rhett's ships and Bonnet's ship were run aground in the shallow water as they tried to maneuver, and there was trash talking from the pirates to the colonel's crews. Both ships were horribly damaged. It was really everything that you would expect to see in a Hollywood blockbuster about pirates.
But eventually, Rhett's sloop was the first to float, and as his command was about to deliver the finishing blow to the pirate ship, Bonnet sent up a flag of truce, and his crew surrendered themselves as prisoners. So all that trash talking got real quiet, and they all surrendered.
The Henry lost 10 men and had 14 wounded, and the Sea Nymph lost 2 men and had 4 wounded. 2 of those 5 died from their wounds not long after.
Colonel Rhett then set sail from Cape Fear with his captives on September 30th, and he arrived in what was called Charlestown at the time, but is Charleston now, on October 3rd. And on October 5th, Bonnet's crew was placed in a watch house that was guarded by the militia because there wasn't an actual prison that could hold them. Bonnet entered the custody of the marshal at his house, and 2 other crew members were eventually moved to the marshal's house just a few days later. They were determined to be important in terms of evidence and testimony for the trial.
On October 24th, Bonnet and one of the other men, he was named Harriet, escaped. The third man, a bosun, refused to go with them. Rumors of incompetency and bribery in relation to the escape immediately started to circulate. The governor offered a reward of £700 to the person who captured the fugitives.
And it turned out that Colonel Rhett, who was pursuing them in addition to other people after the reward, was the one that recaptured Bonnet. And Harriet was actually killed during the pursuit. He was shot.
On October 28th, trials of the crew began in Charlestown before Judge Trott. All but 4 were found guilty and sentenced to death.
And on Saturday, November 8th of 1718, the guilty men were all executed at White Point, which is near Charleston. But on November 10th, Stede Bonnet's trial began. It lasted 2 days, and he was found guilty. He attempted to shift some of the blame to Blackbeard, but that was really futile. It was obvious that he had willingly participated in a lot of these activities.
In the Lord Chief Justice's speech pronouncing Bonnet's sentence, he said, while tallying the major's many acts of piracy, "Not to mention the many acts of piracy you committed before, for which, if your pardon from man was never so authentic, yet you must expect to answer for them before God." His speech goes on for many, many pages of the 1724, quote, "General History of Pirates," which you can read online because we will link to it in our show notes.
Also in the Chief Justice's speech, there is a lot of talk about not only was he a pirate, but he was also a murderer. And it was a lot of "The wrath of God is coming for you." He was so incensed that this man had been pardoned and then went back to this life and did a lot of horrible things. He really was not short of breath when it came to condemnation in that speech. And Bonnet was executed by hanging on December 10th of 1718, and he was only 30 at that point, and he had spent less than 2 years living the life of a pirate. So after his what may have been a mental break, he kind of burned it out. He just gunned it and then was no more. So he kind of did the live fast, die young thing in the 1700s.
Right. In my imagination, I feel like he was going for Han Solo and wound up as Tobias Funke.
Yeah, but still sort of oddly beloved, which is the interesting part of it.
And a kind of oddly beloved Tobias Funke.
That's true. It all makes sense. So that is the story of Stede Bonnet, which is a brief but fascinating
life as a pirate.
Yeah, kind of from the almost a pretender's perspective, since he kind of buys his way into that world.
Right. I feel like it's the 18th century version of buying a shiny sports car and then going on a cross-country spree of crime.
Yeah, and as I said at the top of the podcast, there are historians who have likened it to his midlife crisis. But hopefully, you know, most midlife crises don't end quite so dramatically. But
now I want to talk about the history of midlife crises, because that seems to me like a very modern invention to bestow upon a pirate.
I concur. So we can put that on the list for future podcasts.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, and you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene! Run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.